betrayal of trust. That severs a passion. Unleashing an angel of death.
Somebody was actually murdered here?
Everybody's talking about the murders. Yeah, chicks love that.
Upon the unfaithful one.
She can't see you. She can't feel you.
But you cheated on me.
Help me, please! Help me!
Well, she's not dead, but I know that you killed her.
I'm innocent. All those cheaters, they all deserve to die.
The Scorned. Get the unrated DVD of The Scorned in October on thefishbowl.com.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to thefandom.com, what I think is going to be a spectacular show today. You know, few if any directors, writers, producers in TV history have the kind of diverse background and resume that our guest today has, from his first credit as Roseanne writer and story editor to his current smash hit Serenity and the highly touted upcoming Wonder Woman, screenwriter of Toy Story and In Case You've Been Cryogenically Frozen, creator of Buffy, Angel, and Firefly. But nobody shares the writer, no writer-director shares the status of being this well-loved by their fans. I'm even stuttering about it. Welcome, Joss Whedon.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
We're so glad you joined us today. You've been having fun lately.
I've been out and about.
Oh my gosh, congratulations on it.
Thank you.
I saw the premiere the other night, as you know, and I really can see why there is the kind of excitement and anticipation and wonderful hysteria revolving around this film and everything that's happened with it. It's great.
Well, I've been working on it for a long while, so a little hysteria is very relaxing.
It's completely due. I hate to rave, but it really is. You have accomplished something that is so very difficult to do, and I know you've, you know, talked about this before, but approaching the balance of finding a way to bring in new fans. I mean, I really think this is a film that can stand alone.
Well, ultimately, that's the only kind of film you ever want to write.
Yeah.
Is a film that anybody can see. People often ask me, you know, how do you write for the fans? I'm like, the characters are in it.
Yeah.
So the fans are taken care of.
Yeah.
And I know this because I am one.
Yeah.
But, you know, ultimately, it's you've got to have something that's for everybody, or it's not. I mean, filmmaking.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I see how new fans can get involved and understand the plot and care about the characters and not even have had to watch Firefly or, you know, much less know all the lines like all the regular, you know, fans do.
You know, it's not even just a question. I mean, it's not just a question of not having watched Firefly. It's a question of not knowing my work, because I'm the kind of guy who bounces around a lot, you know, from genre to genre, and there's comedy, and there's romance, and there's violence, and there's action, and there's horror. You know, it's all good for me. But
yeah,
for a lot of American audiences, that's kind of a little shocking. So
yeah,
Striking that balance is tough. That's been the main body of work.
It's a great balance that you strike, too. I was thinking it has everything, you know, drama, comedy, Nathan with his shirt off.
Hey. I'm cheap, what can I say? We didn't have a lot of money. We had to use what we had.
We loved it, baby. So tell me about, I'll just, you know, kind of go with the flow on that. With the process of working with Universal, and as I've heard you say in other interviews, they were really extremely freeing with you. I mean, that they were unswerving, loyal, and unmeddlesome, you say.
It actually goes further than that. And I say this a little bit with embarrassment, because, you know, I'm supposed to be all that and a big artiste, but they actually really made the film better. I learned things from them about, you know, what I was doing with the rhythms and the music and the, you know, and just, you know, in terms of this is my first film. I didn't expect to be looking to, you know, a bunch of suits for artistic advice, and yet these guys were whip smart about what the film needed, and, you know, and that meant sometimes even saying, you know, trust the movie more than you do. They really brought a lot to the party. I think the movie is better for having been made there than it would have been.
Wow. That is incredibly...
Isn't that just like...
Yeah, rare.
Black is white, people. We are through the looking glass.
And, I mean, how incredibly rare for, I mean, really, for a director-writer and someone whose heart is so completely wonderfully attached to the project, to think that anyone, especially a studio and executives, can bring something like that to the table.
Well, ultimately, when you stop thinking that... you start making really hermetically sealed work. You stop. You know, ultimately, you've got to be the guy who knows what it is you set out to do. And Universal trusted me to be that guy. But then you have to have people helping you along the road. Everybody knows where you want to go. They can help give you directions.
Right.
If they don't know where you want to go, well, then you shouldn't be walking. You should be sitting still and trying to figure that out. I mean, ultimately, a studio executive is no different than an actor. An actor is going to bring something that you didn't expect to the role, or they shouldn't be doing it. Nobody's there just to follow orders. It's a collaboration.
That's quite wonderful, and I know that you often work with, you know, the people that you've worked with before. I mean, I know that you've retained a team, which is great. So that it's a great balance of having, you know, your core people and your team, and even other actors, three of them that you've worked with before,
mm-hmm.
in this film. And Tim Minear, I know, is, you know, you have worked together so often. So
well, if you find somebody who can do their job well,
mm-hmm.
and who is pleasant to be around, and in the case of the actors, and let's face it, Tim Minear, very, very nice to look at.
Yes.
You don't turn your back on that. Why would you?
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's a great, you know, credit to your work, though, that you with the kind of pressure that's on, you're able to retain that kind of, you know, flexibility and relationship.
Both. I think the credit basically is, well, they show up again.
That helps. That helps. So, but as far as you working with Universal, I mean, I know that they were impressed, and of course they are duly about the amazing response to the Firefly DVDs. But what exactly do you credit their faith in you to be unmeddlesome about?
You know, a lot of it goes to Mary Parent, because she had been pursuing me as a director, mm-hmm. as a writer-director, before the Serenity issue ever came up. And in fact, when I was looking to house Serenity, she stepped in instantly because she said, you know, I trust you as a filmmaker. I'm interested in what you're passionate about.
Wow.
You don't seem to be able to shut up about this, so why don't you show me those DVDs?
Oh, my gosh.
So that helped a lot.
Chills, literally.
It's been a long time to get people to a point where they would trust me with a movie. When I was a writer in Hollywood working on movies, you know, I was extremely successful and could, you know, if I talked about directing, people looked at me like I was talking Swedish.
Mm.
Like they just nobody wanted to hear it. So to be in a different position and to have, you know, the studio, and that means, you know, Stacy and everybody else pursuing me, and actually
yeah.
Stacy Snyder, who runs the studio, the movie division, you know, to have them actually pursuing me meant that, you know, that things have changed.
Yeah.
It's taken me a long time to change them.
But now you're in the club.
Apparently I'm in the club.
I think at least, yes.
I get a blazer. I'm going to have a blazer.
You're going to have a blazer?
Yeah, a handshake, and
okay.
It's a good club.
Yeah, it's a pretty good club, and you're right, not an easy one to get in. I mean, to have, you know, looked into the future and seen this, I mean, for any writer, you know, doing his first work back in the Roseanne days, I think would be, you know, it's almost fantasy that you've done that.
Well, you know, part of the good news was, you know, I had something that we don't have anymore, a training ground. I got to make, you know, 7 years of B-movies.
Mm.
Before I did that, you know, we don't have that kind of system anymore. People go from one video to their first feature film,
yeah.
and they ain't ready, and it often shows. And there really isn't a training ground for directors anymore. But making my own show for so long, you know, I really got to learn the ropes to an extent. And obviously, TV and movies are different. But I guarantee you, there's going to be a ton of people who go out there and say, "Well, you know, it's just he hasn't transcended TV. It's got a TV feel to it." Because I ever directed TV, because there's a stigma attached to it. But
yeah,
at the same time,
no.
I learned my craft, and part of my craft is knowing what I need to shoot, making my days, respecting my budget,
right.
and you know, making creative decisions before I actually get on set and have, you know, 150 people waiting for me to say something. So I think that gave the studio a level of comfort that they're quite frankly not used to.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the way most people direct. And obviously I didn't strictly adhere to storyboards and never veer from them. You have to let the process be organic.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you have to know, again, where you're heading.
Yeah.
And if you do, the studio can sit back and go, you know what? We said, here's your budget. They're spending it. They're putting it all on the screen. Let's go and see what's happening on this other soundstage.
It's, oh yeah, right, wow. That's, I mean, what more could anybody hope to hear in this business? It's just, that's it, boy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. Gosh, there's so many places I could go right now from there. I think one that I want to definitely address is, I just love, and I know this is a complete Whedon-ism, but your ability to go from the funny quip, the sassy comment, straight into an action sequence that's just fabulous and exciting, and we're on the edge of our seats, and perfectly justified. I mean, it all came from somewhere.
Well, there's two things at work. One is, that's what interests me, because that's the way life is. Life is the surprise. It's the romance where you don't expect it. It's the humor where you don't expect it. It's horror where you don't expect it. And I think in American films, a lot of times genres get so codified and so separated that it's like, okay, this is the movie with the scary, and this is the buddy cop movie with the quips, and this is, you know, the romance. And life ain't like that. And the great movies weren't like that. You know, the great movies had elements of, you know, there's hilarious stuff in It's a Wonderful Life. It's also the most torturous drama I've ever seen. There's elements of horror in The Searchers. You know, there's a lot going on in every movie and in life. And ultimately the juxtaposition, you say it works. I think it works because when I'm talking about humor, I'm talking about the people in the movie. I'm talking about the humor comes from them. It comes from their points of view not lining up. And that's where the conflict comes from. Ultimately, that's where the action comes from. It comes from people with different agendas. And humor that is actually intrinsic, that is natural and belongs in the movie, is going to be that. It's not going to be, oh, we have a clever pun on a pop culture thing. It's going to be, this is how Jane feels. It's different from how Mouse feels. I didn't see it coming, but now that I think of it, of course that's what he'd think. If the humor is natural, then people will accept it. If it's forced, then you can't go from there to the extreme sentiment. And let's face it, I'm a big wuss.
Are you?
You know, I basically make women pictures with kicking in them.
Well, we've noticed that, but it's never complained, you know.
Well, you know, sometimes it's hard for people to make that adjustment. You have to make sure you're riding it carefully, and that they basically believe everything they're seeing. That is what is going to get anything you're going to do through the door.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, it's so much fun. I mean, I remember when Malcolm said, he's talking about his favorite sin, oh, I'm a big fan of all seven. I mean, and it just goes straight into the fun of it. I mean, so yeah, the humor and the action. Do you find that in your own life where it's like you're in a situation that should be sad and you're actually finding humor in it, or vice versa?
Or, you know, I'm in the middle of a sword fight and I stop to make a joke. What? Who doesn't?
Right.
You know, the thing about the line you mentioned is it's also the entire meaning of the film is that line.
That's
the most potent message of the movie for me.
Interesting.
It's basically saying, why don't we give up the idea of sin? Why don't we stop codifying behavior that way and just accept that people are what they are?
Well, we do have them.
Like, that we're flawed and that, you know, obviously we could be better, but you don't get better by trying to force people to conform. That's kind of the point of the movie. And so that joke, you know, he wouldn't be making a joke at that point if he didn't have something really important to say.
But
ultimately, yes. Have you ever cracked up at a funeral? Of course.
And you almost feel guilty, but it's so human.
I mean, it's just, the things are funnier when they're not supposed to be.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing that, if it works, gives it the alchemy that really makes the fans crazy, is... humor is funnier in a tense context, and tension is greater when people have been funny because it makes you care about them more.
Absolutely.
So, and romance is more, you know, if life is in the balance, if people might die, then romance is actually, you know, much more romantic. It's got that charged, you know, this is the only moment in the world feeling that we all want from romance.
Yeah, interesting. You know, you mentioned that in another interview, that you had to kill a couple of people because then there wasn't any... There just wasn't any risk, and anyone could die at any time. And I found myself going, "No, I hope it's not Jewel," you know, and these things, you know. I mean, it's a dangerous movie.
Well, you know, you have to say, if you're going to say that the price of freedom is high, then you can't just say it.
Hmm.
Otherwise, you're lying. And it's a thing in movies that I have always been annoyed by is the righteous Lord that looks over all of us and only kills the annoying guy. And this is it's a tradition. If you like somebody, they can't be harmed. And ultimately, I'm like, no. You know what? You get yourself into a war. Guess what? It's a war.
Yeah.
And I put everybody through just hell. And I mean, you know, and literally, people need to know that everybody's expendable, because otherwise they're really not going to be involved, and they're going to know that I was disingenuous, that I said the price of freedom was high, but I didn't really mean it.
Wow. Yeah. No. I there's a lot of lessons. I mean, I'm a leaf in the wind, and I know there's.
Well, now we got to be. I don't know how. Are we live?
We are live. Well, so don't say anything you don't want to say. No, I absolutely.
Be careful about what we say.
No, I absolutely agree. Thank you. I absolutely will.
We're talking spoilers, people. I'm just putting that out there right now.
No.
Spoilers going on. It's happening right under your noses.
I'm sorry. I'm going to switch tracks here to, and I really didn't mean to do that, Joss, but I wasn't going to say too much, but let's go in this other direction. You mentioned a few minutes ago, 7 years of B-movies. And that's something that we talk about a lot on this show. Tell me your feelings on just because something is sci-fi, fantasy, or horror, it being classified as a B-movie. I mean, this stuff is the most quality, well-written, well-loved stuff on television or film. And yet it's still often seen by the public as B-movies, quote-unquote. Tell me your feelings on all that.
Well, it's a fight that I'm going to be fighting, you know, my whole life. Genre, particularly any kind of fantasy genre, is always ghettoized and considered lowbrow.
Mm.
And for the life of me, I cannot explain this. You know, I have this argument with my stepfather all the time. What are you going to do something without vampires or spaceships in it? I'm like, never. Does the word never still not mean never? Come on. And,
right.
You know, he's like, but when are you going to do something serious? And I'm like, Hamlet is a ghost story.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Hamlet's a ghost story. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
true.
It makes me completely crazy because everything gets ghettoized, and everything that I do, my actors never get any cred on television because they're young. Because they're not considered, you know, and they're dropping on a dime from extreme comedy to extreme drama.
Yeah.
They're doing what any other actor is doing, but they're doing all of it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get the cred. Comedy.
The Emmy nominations
are never
don't,
considered.
Yeah.
Is this a comedy or is this a serious work? Guess
yeah.
what? Groundhog Day is probably the most profound statement about human existence that's come out of American cinema in the last 20 years.
Huh.
And it's also a fantasy.
Yeah.
And so for both those reasons, nobody notices. Well, you're not supposed to notice. See, that's the thing. Gandhi, you're supposed to notice that Ben Kingsley is Gandhi and that every British actor who ever lived is in the film, so it must be important. Okay, well, give me a break. Okay,
so
that's
true.
Not going to teach anybody about Gandhi.
Yeah.
What you need to do is get under their skin. You need to get into their naughty places. You need to get into their dark places and speak to them then.
Mm.
And genre does that in a way that almost nothing else does.
I absolutely agree.
Genre speaks to everybody because it's about the human condition, because it deals with every aspect of the human condition at the same time. It deals with every era of history at the same time.
Absolutely.
It requires the creation and then from the audience the understanding and acceptance of entire worlds.
Yeah.
And these have to be believable worlds. It has to be well done. Obviously, there's a lot of crappy science fiction, but that's,
right.
you know.
But other worlds without prejudice to the fact that they're other. The
yeah.
other word doesn't even make sense almost.
Yeah, it's very dispiriting. But ultimately, you know, the good news is, You know, Drew Goddard, who was a writer on Buffy, said to me what I always thought was the sweetest thing I ever heard. He's like, you don't understand. Buffy's punk rock. And I was like, oh, my God. That just made me so much cooler. It is sometimes nice to have an element of, well, we haven't been co-opted. We're doing something that, if some people don't take it seriously, it gives us a little swagger.
Mm.
It makes us feel like, and I don't like to be exclusionary, but it makes us feel like, okay, I'm in the gang.
We're in the club. Yeah, we get it. Yeah.
And at the same time, you know, the biggest movies are always fantasy movies. Which I think they people are understanding financially, but emotionally, they don't really get it. And then the irony of the thing is, Return of the King sweeps the Oscars because it's incredibly popular. It's an extraordinary achievement, but I don't think it's a great film. Or a great fantasy.
It's a big film.
It's a big film.
Yeah.
And so Hollywood understands big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They get big, but we will always be. There will always be the clubhouse,
Thank God.
It does frustrate me. But at the end of the day, it's a place to hang out.
I'd rather be in it than not, and that's why this show exists. I mean, it's all about genre, you guys, and how this is the stuff that is really hot right now, somehow the world is just waking up to that.
Yes.
Okay, you mentioned that, I love what you said to one reporter journalist about adversity being like a mosquito. You want it to go away, but it's something that's fueled you. Hmm. Where does that come from? You said from being an outsider. Is that, I mean, not to get too deep there, but I mean, in terms of childhood, you've mentioned high school as being a heightened reality. This has got to come out of some depth of
am I a deeply alienated person?
I'm so
yes,
sorry.
I am. Am I a menace to society?
I would say
possibly.
I would say past tense, but tell me a little bit about that if you can.
It really goes away.
Yeah.
No matter how much I talk to my therapist, ultimately, there's a certain amount of separateness that everybody has to deal with, and some people just fixate on it, and I did from a very, very early age. All of my salient childhood memories are of being alone.
Salient, yeah.
Oh. And I come from a very big family. Big, boisterous, fun family. But all of my most important memories are of me being alone. And most of my memories of being in school are of me being alone.
Did you prefer it that way? Or did it just work out?
It becomes a place of comfort. Obviously, I've described myself as the world's neediest misanthrope. because, I'm like, I want to be alone in my cave. Hey, guys, what are you doing? Listen, there's room in the cave. I crave company and companionship and love and all the things that everybody else craves, but I do feel a certain separation from most people. And that's not something that you can really overcome. But what's interesting about it is that ultimately everybody has that in them. And if that becomes the focus, not only the reason why you write, but what you're writing about, it really is something that everybody can relate to.
Interesting. Yeah. No, it is very true. Especially the people, I think, that you wouldn't think that from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because everybody is alone. I mean, some people, we make connections, and that's great, but we make them because we're alone. Mm. Because we are all stuck inside our little skulls, and there's nothing we can do about it.
And how do you feel about holding on to that, or will it even be necessary for you to hold on to it now that things are getting so big? I mean, with Wonder Woman, you're going to have very little opportunity to even be alone.
Oh, you know what? I'm a writer.
Yeah.
There will always be room for me to be alone. Because I create that room. You have to.
Yeah.
Now, I have children, which means that I, for the first time in my life, have people that I feel an absolute connection with, and by the way, could just stand and watch for like 4 hours.
Exactly.
That makes it even harder.
Yeah.
To even more than the work, it makes it harder to create that space. But you have to. You have to because that's where the world lives. It lives in the brain and lives when you're alone. And so you make time for that when you stop. Guess what else stops?
When you stop being alone, when you stop creativity,
you stop creating
stops.
Space
yeah.
to create
creativity.
Then you're treading water.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What kind of things, just thinking about when you said watching your kids for 4 hours, you know, certainly know that some of your inspiration, Dickens and Shakespeare and a lot of classics and music and all of that, languages, but what kind of thing day-to-day inspires you to write or shows up?
Ultimately, everything.
Mm.
Everything I see gets thrown in the blender. It's just, you know, my father... we were at dinner one time, and somebody was talking about inspiration and you know, the muse and you know, a gift from above. And my father said, "Great work does not come from inspiration. Great art does not come from inspiration. Great art comes from something you saw before that worked."
Mm.
Which cracked me up to no end. But it's kind of true. It's not so much that you copy something, but you'll see something, and it can be anything. It could be a news story, it could be a TV show, it could be a movie, it could be a T-shirt, it could be a gesture, it could be anything, and it triggers something in you, and you just...
Right.
And then everything starts to tumble. You go, oh, wait a minute, and you suddenly get rocketed into this world, and it may owe something to the thing you've seen, but it's not that.
Right.
It's where that thing sent you.
It's a, yeah.
And when you do, when that happens, you look at your wife, and she looks at you, and then you go upstairs. Because she knows that look.
That's great. That's so great. It's, yeah, right. Okay. So it's okay to copy as long as you do it better.
It's not a question of doing it better. And it's not a question of copying. It's
no.
A question of saying, this gave me something that I felt, or it led to an idea, or, you know, there's something I have to say that just got tweaked by something that I just saw.
Right.
It's again, if it's just copying, believe me, people will know.
Right, no, I didn't mean that. As long as it becomes...
And to say better is to do a disservice, because you may be watching Citizen Kane, and that may be the thing that makes you go,
right.
Oh, my God, wait a minute.
Right.
You know, I read The Killer Angels. You know, people know this story, but I read The Killer Angels. You know, that's an extraordinary Pulitzer-winning book. I didn't go off to write a better Civil War book. I just thought, hey, my God, this really makes me excited about the Millennium Falcon. You know, the world of Serenity happened because I became obsessed with the minutiae of life. It came from that book, but it's nothing like that book.
Right, right. No, that's not... I mean that it becomes its own new soup in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a whole new mix.
Exactly.
Off of the inspiration of something which was wonderful for you and personal.
You know, everything that came before it that would make that sing to you. Everything goes in the blender, and then, you know, it all sort of comes out. And every now and then, somebody goes, well, isn't this kind of like, or, and isn't it kind of like something you did before, or something that's kind of like this, and you go, oh, balls. I hope that's okay to say on radio.
Absolutely.
And then sometimes, you know, this has happened to me twice recently. You have an idea, you're like, this is the one, and then you see something, a new book or a new movie, and you're like, yeah, clearly it's a good idea, because they did it great. Okay, into the trash.
Well, right. But when your mind and heart with the rest of your world experiences, mm-hmm. it's become your own soup.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, it's wonderful. And the kind of excitement that must breed in you. You've said, it's like, I don't want to know the magician's tricks, and I'm the magician. Do you kind of wonder...
God, I forgot I said that. That sounds great.
Isn't that great?
That
I know, you should. And I know a lot of these fans have heard that because they're your current, but I know that there's a lot of new people listening, too, because of the buzz of the
next that's right, I did say.
So it must be exciting to kind of not know what's coming next out of your own brain because of the fact that it's cooking.
It's an extraordinary delight. It's literally my favorite thing in the world, is the germination of an idea, where you suddenly go, and you're just floating. You're out there floating, and you're just looking at stuff and just picking stuff. It really is the greatest privilege I've known. And, you know, it's the upside of being alone. It's the thing that you get if you are forced to step outside of the world, as I was, then you get to find another one.
Oh, that is so exciting. And I imagine... Well, I find it particularly inspiring, you know, for people who are also loners. There's a lot of us, and you wouldn't think that we are, but yeah, that is the upside.
Yeah, it's I think what fueled a lot of the fans, a lot of genre fans in particular, is the idea of, you know, any world that I'm welcome to, as Steely Dan said, is better than the one I come from.
Mm. Wow. Wow. That's that pretty much says it.
Yeah, well, you know, I can quote me some 70s rock.
Can you? Yeah, well, obviously you can, and musician that you are, I mean, you've got to know how well-loved all the music has been. I mean, what other show can get away with doing that than Buffy the Musical? I mean, it's just so wonderful. How much fun did you have on that? And you know what? I know we're a little bit over time, but if you could just tell us.
Well, I will tell you that I had way too much fun.
I bet.
And I'll have to pay for it at some point. you know, it's the great thing about Buffy is it's a perfect representation of who I am, and who I am wants to make musicals. And so in Buffy, you can look at a lot of episodes. They're so romantic and hyperbolic and colorful and silly. People should be bursting into song. So when they finally did, it didn't really bother anybody.
It's so true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems due, as any good musical should be.
Exactly.
Yeah, so really, you do want to write musicals?
Oh, if I could do just one thing, I would do that. But
really?
But they take a really long time, and they're really hard.
Do you think we might see Buffy the Musical or Angel or Serenity?
It could happen. If it happened to anything I've done, it would be Buffy, because Buffy really does have that sort of female-driven, heart-on-its-sleeve kind of delight. The Angel is a little darker.
Yeah.
Obviously, Serenity is not doesn't lend itself to that. No, Buffy.
Maybe the Starlight Express, maybe, or something.
Buffy, absolutely, in a way, was you know, destined to be musical.
Yeah.
It's just a question of whether or not I'd ever have time to write it.
I mean, hopefully there will be almost no time, but enough time for that, right?
That would be the idea.
That's so great. Jazz, we are actually over time, but there's a couple of questions from the audience. If you had time to take any, or
I will take them.
Really? Because I know you love your fans, and they truly love you. Here's a couple from Immortal. We know you're busy with movie, but TV needs you, Joss. You've assembled some incredible writers over the years on your shows. Is there any way you could get some of the band back together, create a show, and have them run with it?
Well, you know, the problem is, you know, when you create something, you fall in love. You fall in love. And to just, even people you adore, it's very hard to say, okay, I created this thing, ta-ta. And part of it is about, you know, I put my name on this, I have a responsibility for it. But part of it is also like, wait a minute, there's a party going on and I can't be there?
Yeah.
It's very, very hard to tear yourself away. That's something that I'd like to do, but in a weird way it requires as much of a commitment as doing a show myself. It's just a different kind. So I'd like to. It's something I've talked to my friends about, you know, but they have to be in a powerful enough position, and I have to be in a powerful enough position that we could actually pull it off.
Right.
And then I would have to find the time to give it what it deserves, because I can't just, you know, put my name on stuff.
Right.
It's much more complicated than that.
No, I absolutely know how that works, and it would almost be like the Whedon studio.
Well,
in
it's
that
like
sense.
You know, here's a lovely family. Do you want to have a kid and let them raise it? They're really the nicest people. Mm.
Right.
Well, you know, gosh.
Right.
I'd be the classic TV movie surrogate mother. I'd have the kid want to keep it.
Yeah, that would be very difficult. I can see that. But, you know, I mean,
I think
great
Kelly
as
Martin will play me.
Would she? Well, she's musical, right?
I hope so.
Okay. Let's see. As a fan of the show, interesting. And I'm just reading this cold, so I'm reading it as I'm saying it. As a fan of the show Firefly, I don't think the 2-minute trailer of Serenity does the movie justice, which I agree, that this is actually a movie that gives you more than the trailer.
Well, good, because if it didn't give you more than the trailer, the trailer would have done it a greater injustice.
But rare, I mean, these days. I mean, it happens.
You know, it's a very tricky movie to market, and I spent a lot of time working with the marketing guys, giving them my ideas about what I wanted. But at the end of the day, you know, what they wanted was focus. Like, this is exciting, and you should go see it. And they're like, let people find out that it's a, you know, great story because they went to see it. Ultimately, they were like, if you try to sell everything that's in it, it's going to become watered down. So they said, let's say it's exciting and funny. And I was like, can we put something in there that shows that it has some meaning to it? And they're like, yes, which they did in the longer trailer, but we don't want to become burdened by it. So it's a very tricky thing. If I was in charge of all marketing, I would do things, you know, slightly differently, because anybody would. But ultimately, I understand exactly what they're doing, and I think they handle it well. My biggest thing is don't give away everything so that when people go to see the movie, there's nothing left. And
right.
That they respect it, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, that's very, very true. And I'm sure they're thinking in terms of getting, you know, the new fans as well as the consistent, solid fans and all of that. So, yeah, that's a tough one. You know what? I lost a little bit of our thing here. I'm going to ask you another question from me while we're getting that back. Tell me, are your kids, I don't know this, are your kids old enough to appreciate all this yet?
Oh, no.
No.
No, my son is 2, and my daughter's even less.
Okay, all right. But what do you think they'll say when they get this? I mean, are they going to be involved, or do you see them as being? It would be very difficult for them to be separate from your work. Would you encourage your kids to go into this line of work?
I would encourage them to be garbage men or writers or any damn thing they want.
Yeah.
Ultimately, if they are happy and they are useful, then nothing else matters. I think they inevitably are going to be surrounded by art. They're going to be surrounded by film. They're going to see a lot of film sets because I need to have them around me. They may well decide that this is the world for them. God knows I grew up in it, and so did my father.
Yeah.
Was it a
family thing?
Well, my father was a television writer, and so was his.
I'm sorry, I did not know that.
So,
wow.
Well, no reason why. I mean, you haven't hung out with us, but
I'm sure
it
people
does.
Do.
It does mean that, you know, I was basically raised by a tribe of funny people, and you know, that is infectious and it's fun, and you know, writing may be the hardest work in the world, but it beats working. So, you know, if they showed a bent for it, if they wanted to do it, of course I'd support it. But
that's very cool.
There's no way I'd try and steer them towards it.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not an easy life. You know, it's very hard to reach the brass ring. And then, you know, the thing they never tell you is, once you do, you basically have a brass ring. And what's that good for? You can't even use it for a coaster.
So true, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the simple things, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't go anywhere.
So what are you guys, I agree, it's this, yeah, what are you guys fans of? I mean, what do you TiVo?
Well, you know,
at home
my
or
love
just
of
you?
Veronica Mars is not hidden. So I'm waiting for that to start up again.
That was one of our questions, actually. We're getting them back.
And
from Trek.
And House is also a very big deal for me.
Fun.
He makes me very excited about people because he hates them so well. but in a beautiful and honorable kind of misanthropic way.
That's fabulous.
It's a very fresh voice, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Those two are probably my big faves right now. There's things I watch. I watch procedurals mostly. I mean, but I don't watch a lot of TV. I sort of happen in while my wife is watching.
Sure. Well, you have a few other things going on here.
And now I have a whole bunch of new shows I have to watch because my friends are in them.
Yes. Yes.
But luckily they seem pretty good. So.
Right. And in your spare time.
Yeah, exactly. What is that again?
Not to go on, but I know everybody's wondering for just a little fun scoop and your feelings about Wonder Woman. Congratulations. That's such a huge, wonderful step.
Thank
and
you.
Do. Tell me how you're feeling about all that.
Well, I feel just very natural about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah.
She's the gal I've been writing all this time. And, I'm having a really good time because although she's well known, she's kind of undiscovered. We know the icon, but not the lady, and so I get to do that, and it's a blast. I'm really, I'm in that place I spoke about where you float around and just pick things up, and the stuff I'm coming up with, I'm really enjoying.
That's great.
So that's all, and there's been no talk of casting, nothing. It's just me. And the keyboard.
That's exciting.
It's
a great stage to just revel in for a while because the rest is coming.
Yeah.
Daniel, our host, has a great question. I love this. Mr. Whedon, I know nothing about Firefly, so I'm a newbie, if you will. What can I expect in Serenity that I couldn't see in Star Trek and Stargate?
I would say, no, I don't know Stargate, unless you're talking about the movie. And I would say, a lot of down-to-earth wit and humanity and stakes that are so low, they're much higher than we're used to.
Mm.
Say that again? So low.
Stakes that are so low, they're much higher than we're used to. This isn't people who are trying to change the destiny of a nation. This is people who would like very much not to be blowed up, please. It's more a story about us in space than it is about space, cue the Jerry Goldsmith.
Interesting.
And that's the thing about it that I was looking for that I had missed from science fiction for a while.
Mm. And still have their morals or whatever, not morals, it's a wrong word, but their humanity so intact. I remember what Zoe said toward the beginning of the film about, I don't want to say too much, but it's just that also was so resounding at the beginning of the film.
Well, you know, the film is really about that. It's really about, you know, how we create ethics and who we are and the little space we carve out for ourselves, both morally and physically. And without hopefully being boring or preachy, the whole movie is about that.
Yeah.
Everybody's space is different and everybody's need is different. And that's also what the movie is about, respecting that.
Right.
So, it's got a lot of things in it that I wanted to talk about, but I wanted to talk about them while stuff was blowing up.
While stuff is blowing up, right? And it does. Yeah. No problem with that. A quick question about Goners. Tell us a little bit about that. There wasn't really much. I know it's pretty close
really
to the best
right now.
I haven't
told anybody much about it.
Okay.
It's a completely new work that does take place in the modern world, though, needless to say, slightly left of center. It's a different it's a different adventure, and it's kind of a horror film. It's dark. It's not nihilistic, but there's a very ugly side to humanity going on in it, and it's just something I wanted to write for a long time and kind of poured out of me. So I'm very excited to try and put that together.
So it's more of a reality thing.
Well, reality is a strong word.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. It takes place in the modern world. It's just a part of the modern world most people don't get to see.
Mm. Wow. Sounds interesting. Very, 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 very. We are over time, and
I know.
Thank you so much for spending the time with us.
We
all appreciate it. And just to let you know, as you would anticipate, and still revel in, there's just tons of email coming in. Thank you, Joss, for your great work. Huge fan of your work. Thank you so much for the years of entertainment.
Thank you.
Loved
so
you in Edinburgh. Love you in Australia. I mean, you're so well loved, and thank you for everything you do for all of us.
Well, I just want to say that, you know, I really appreciate the interest. It's nice to be loved, but if I could be feared, that would be a little cooler. So if somebody could work on that.
We'll work on that. Next time I see you, we'll just cower and hide.
If you could.
Okay, well, it sounds like you'll be bringing us there if you usually accomplish what you set out to do, so we'll look for that.
Okay, cool.
Joss, you're the best.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
You.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Matt?
A betrayal of trust. That severs a passion. Unleashing an angel of death.
Somebody was actually murdered here?
Everybody's talking about the murders. Yeah, chicks love that.
Upon the unfaithful one.
She can't see you. She can't feel you.
But you cheated on me.
Ah! Help me, please! Help me!
Well, she's not dead, but I know that you killed her.
I'm innocent. All those cheaters, they all deserve to die.
The Scorn. Get the unrated DVD of The Scorned in October on thefishbowl.com.